Morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us again on this cold and little blistering cold. Also, I think I heard Tuesday's been very cold, so just a heads up.
But it's not as cold today as it was yesterday.
Yeah, but all right. Either way, we the last few weeks we've specifically been talking about Rav Moshe's tshuvos relating to Jewish identity. So we've spoken about, you know, especially in a changing, you know, world, where Jews, for the most Orthodox Jews, have left the ghetto and now are in a, you know, assimilated America. And so emotions we've seen has tshuvos about changing names to American names. We talked last week about clothing and American clothing. And so one of the major identifiers of Jews, especially for Jewish men, is the wearing of a yarmulke, a kippah. And Rav Moshe has a number of tshuvos relating to it. I actually want to do like a number of maybe 2 or 3 weeks even on it, because he has a lot of tshuvos, and it's something that really kind of defines one of the real issues about identity. I think when people think about like identity, what it means to hide Jewishness, like, you know, when I go to a foreign country that I feel like is, you know, not so friendly to Jews, I'll wear a hat. And I think it's pretty common, people, you know, a lot of people who go to work and don't wear yarmulkes and for work for, you know, various reasons. There's certainly a lot to do with kippahs and identity. Of course, this is primarily talking about men, but I think it's something that we can all relate to in terms of our identity, being Jewish in an outward fashion. And so Rav Moshe has a lot to say on it, and I really want to talk about Rav Moshe's perspective on these issues.
You know, I'm not a man, but I really wanted to ask about kippahs last week when we were talking about dressing like an American to fit in. But I was like, well, kippahs are different.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, at the end, we might talk about women kippahs. Rav Moshe doesn't mention it, but it's an interesting side. Yeah, there is an interesting question about women wearing kippahs also. Or why shouldn't they have to wear kippahs? That's really the question. But okay, so to be able to understand kippahs well, I think it's worth like a few brief moments of introduction, just to get a basic sense of what's happening so you can better appreciate Rav Moshe and what he's doing. The first is that when we're talking about wearing a kippah, there are a number of different cases, situations in which wearing a kippah may or may not be required. And the level of requirement is going to differ based on the situation. So just to give a basic sense, the most stringent situation in which wearing a kippah is almost absolutely necessary is going to be in a situation of Davar Shebikdusha, something which relates to holiness, something either entering a shul or relating to saying a bracha of some sort. So look at, for instance, source number one, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Yesh Omrim She'asur Lahutzi Askar Mipi Brosh Meguleh, Yesh Omrim She'esh Lim Chosh Lulikanes Bebet Knesset Begilu Herosh. So there are some physicians who believe, and this is actually what we Paskin, that it's forbidden to recite any Shem Hashem, you can't say a bracha or anything has the God's name in it with your head uncovered. And some as well mention that you should protest anyone who enters into a shul with a uncovered head. Right, so those are the most. I actually was going to mention briefly as an aside, there is this custom for some reason that everyone's very, that non-Jews come into shul also have to wear kippah. It's not really in Shulchan Aruch. There's not a real source for that, but, you know, I guess
it's
nice.
It's a good idea, because then you don't have to go up to somebody and say, are you Jewish? You know, you have to.
Yeah, I guess, you know, also they want to fit in better. I mean, like, I understand why, but it's, there's no, like, real source for, or necessity for it.
Church, they expect you to take your hat off.
I think, so we'll talk about.
Cardinal came, he had his yarmulke.
Yeah.
He had his own yarmulke, yeah. So we'll talk about, we'll definitely talk about church in a minute, yeah. That's situation A, the first situation. Situation B is in terms of walking. There may be a slight difference between if it's walking farther than 4 amot, less than 4 amot, the details are not really relevant to us, but walking in general. And for that, there's actually a lot of debate as to how extensive is there a prohibition, or even is there a prohibition for walking without a kippah. The Shulchan Aruch, if you want to take a look at source 2, says as follows. This is in Simon Bet, which is a list of things you should do in the morning. And some of the things in the list are halachot, things you have to do. And some of the things are kind of stem from Rambam, from the section of the Rambam called Hichot Deot, a section of the Rambam which primarily deals with kind of like recommendations as to the proper conduct, but it's not really so normative. You don't have to do it. There's no, it's more of like a midat chesidut, a lot of the things in that list. And so take a look, for instance, at this, at Siman Bet Sif Vav, this source number two, where the Lashon Hara says as follows. Asur lielech bekom hazakufa. It's forbidden to walk, with a upright stance. You shouldn't be, you know, if you walk, you know, like your head high and your shoulders extended, it looks a little haughty. You should look, you should be, you know, a little bit more humble in the way you walk. It doesn't mean you have to be like, you know, a ghetto Jew who has his, you know, back rolled over. I think it just means like, don't be like, no, there's like, there, I don't know, it's not, it, you don't have to be meek, but I think there's a statement about like not being like a hottie. There's certainly like a, there's a certain walk that's more hottie. So Shraf says you shouldn't walk in that way. And as well, you should not walk for Amot with a head uncovered. If you look at the Ramah, he adds more things. You should cover your body. You shouldn't walk barefoot. And you should make sure to clean yourself or go to the bathroom and day and night. That's a form of cleanliness. So if you take a look at this list of things that the Ramah, that the Shulchan Aruch lists, most of the things here, they're not really normative, halacha, you know, things that you'd find that, you know, you have to do. And if you don't do them, then you would in some ways, you know, be transgressed one of the 613, you know, mitzvot. That's not really what's on this list. It seems like most of this list are, you know, recommendations, good things to do, what we might term as midat chasidut, proper conduct. Proper conduct for those who are, you know, want to act appropriately. And so that's the way that many understand this Shulchan Aruch. That's the way, for instance, the Magen Avraham, if I look at source number three, says, this entire principle of walking for Amot, all of that is Midat Chasidut. It's not a mitzvah, it's not a prohibition, but it's some type of proper conduct, maybe conduct that even everyone, old Jewish men, have accepted upon themselves, but it still is just proper conduct, it's not actually an obligation. That's one perspective. Now there's another perspective, which is the Taz. And the Taz believes that there's an actual prohibition to walk for Amot without a kippah. It says as follows, Inyan ikar davar yimesh isur liyot bigul arosh, nir ali, source number four, nir ali sheyesh isur gamur. It seems to me that there is a full-on prohibition to not wear a kippah while walking for Amot. You have to wear a kippah. It is a prohibition.
Now, what? I guess you have.
Yeah, any head covering. Sorry, yeah, any head covering. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, any way of covering your head. Now, what does this come down to? What is this prohibition? So, part of this debate is it a midat chasidut? Is it just, you know, proper conduct, or is it there's an actual prohibition? May relate to what exactly the purpose behind wearing a kippah is, because the Taz suggests what is the purpose of wearing a kippah. So this goes back to Alan's point previously. That the Hainu, Kevan Shikhoku Akshav, Bena Akum, Shosin Kin Tamid, Tekev Shoshvin, Porkin Me'alehem Akova. That there is this rule by the non-Jews that whenever they sit down, they take off their hats. That's their conduct, that's the way they act. This is certainly true in churches. If you ever go to a church, you would know that this is certainly the rule that you know, you're not allowed to enter a church with your head covering. And, I know people have told me that they'll yell at you if you want to keep it on. It's certainly something that they do even to today. And I think the Taz is arguing that it's not just in their, it sounds like from the Taz, that it's not just that this was something rule within the churches, but it's really the way that they conducted themselves throughout. You would go out in the street, you'd put your hat on, and then when you came home or you sat down, proper gentlemanly conduct was to take off your hat.
That was also the case even in the 50s, when people still wore hats before Kennedy became president and ended the custom of people wearing hats, because you wouldn't wear one at the inauguration. They used to wear hats on the street. When they came home, they put them down, hang them up or whatever. That's exactly
what they were. They weren't baseball caps either.
Yeah, they were like fedoras.
Yeah, my grandfather, who's, you know, born in the 20s,
yeah,
he still, you know, every time he goes out, wears a hat. That's like the way he, you know, he grew up.
Yeah. He also, for the national anthem.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Why did Kennedy refuse to wear a hat?
Pardon?
Why did Kennedy refuse to wear a hat?
He just didn't want to. Yeah. People took up the style and killed the hat industry, except for Jews.
So we should look, actually, this may be very relevant to us today, we'll get there in a minute, which is, Ramosha has a number of tuvos, And it might be worthwhile to see what years these two votes are written, because you see, might be see a difference based on, you know, the sociological changes may occur between, you know, the years of the two votes. So we'll see that in a minute. But either way, it was in the background information. I just want to get this clear. The Taz's explanation, the Taz believes there is a full-on prohibition to walk without a kippah. The Taz is based primarily on this prohibition of b'chukoteyam lo telechu. Following the non-Jews, there's a prohibition, we've talked about this in the past, of acting like the non-Jews do. And the Taz argues the non-Jews have a practice that they do not, that they take off their kippah, they take off their head covering whenever they sit down, whenever they go to church, whenever they're not walking in the street, they take off their head covering. And therefore, it is forbidden for us to act like them. We cannot do the same. We have to keep our kippahs on. We have to have some type of head covering. And that's why the Taz believes there's also a prohibition, even while seated, you should still be wearing a head covering as well. Yeah, even you could argue even especially. There may be some differences, but we can there's interesting things to talk about the Taz, but we can talk about that at a different point. Regardless, the Magen Avraham, who we saw earlier, seemed to say it's only Midat Chassidut, right? The Magen Avraham, who argued that it's only a proper conduct, it's not an actual prohibition to wear a kippah. What is the basis for the kippah, right? Because it can't be based on Chukat Aklam, because then it'd be prohibition, a bona fide prohibition, just like the Taz argued. Instead, the purpose of wearing a kippah, why do you do so, is based on this Gemara, tells a story about Rabbi Tarfon, that why do you wear a kippah? The Tehavi can look at source 5, he quotes it in a certain context, that the Tehavi alei imte d'shmaya, that the purpose of a kippah is so that you have upon you, imte d'shmaya, you have the fear of heaven upon you. That the theory goes that if you have some type of head covering, it reminds you that God's on top of you, you're not like a head, you know, it's not you alone and nothing above you. There is something above you. There's something to remind you that God stands above you, and it's supposed to keep you, you know, rooted and grounded.
But the biggest question I've got in my life from Goyim is why do I keep my head covered? And that's the answer I always gave, because that's what I was taught.
Yeah, so that's the main answer. Yeah, Bella, yeah. Oh, cool. Thank you. I did not know that. That's thank you. That's nice to know.
Like something on their head, that's
the villain. Yeah. Yeah, that's villain. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, otherwise there's no, these are the main sources for tefillin, for wearing a kippah, for wearing a head covering for men. The main one is really this Magen Avraham's quote, which is into the Shmaya, some type of reverence for heaven on top of you. But the Taz thinks there's also this prohibition of Chukat Akum, this prohibition of following non-Jews, and therefore he thinks there's a bona fide prohibition. The Taz, you know, believes both are true. There's also, if you look further on in the Taz, you see he also mentions the into the Shmaya, the fear of heaven. He thinks both are true. What's significant, though, for the Taz is it's a bona fide prohibition and not just a Midat Chassidut. So let's get right into this. That's a great question. That's exactly Rav Moshe's issue.
You know the halachic process. I don't know when that.
So yeah. So let's go right into Rav Moshe's tshuva. Perfect. So Rav Moshe has a number of tshuvas relating to kippah. We'll go through a number of them. That's kind of why some are related to different topics, which is why I wanted to cover this over multiple weeks. But the first tshuva, this is actually the first one in Or Chaim, not because it's the earliest tshuva he ever wrote, but because just in terms of ordering how they made it. But it is a fairly early tshuva. It's written in 1957, Vav Elul Tavshin Tadzayin. This is source number 6. And you can see in this tshuva, Rav Moshe is talking. I skipped the beginning because it's rather long and rather detailed. But somebody asked Rav Moshe, the basic question was, do you need to cover, if you're wearing a kippah, do you need to cover your full head? Or is it enough to cover even a little bit? Right? Does the kippah have to cover most of the head, or is it even a little bit sufficient? That's the question, because Rav Shlomo Kugar, an Achron, believes you have to cover most of the head. That's his position. And Rav Moshe deals with this question. The details are not really so important for us. What matters for us, for our purposes, is that in this discussion, at the end of the discussion, Rav Moshe explains what he thinks the prohibition or the idea of wearing a kippah is. What is the level of obligation? What is the level of chiyuv? That's inherent in wearing a kippah. That's why this tshuva is so important. So I'm kind of skip to the middle of it, but we can start from the after the three dots, the second paragraph I have here, where Moshe continues. V'lachein l'masa, and therefore, at the end of the day, practically, I wrote to l'hachmir v'lachush l'dat ha'gon Rav Shlomo Kugler. If you want to be machmir, you want to be the most machmir you can. So tzarich l'chasa rov rushoshu rov akovayim v'yamikaz u'bekipot ha'gedolim. So you want to be machmir, you can wear a kippa that covers most of your head. That's if you want to be machmir. Aval l'dina, but in terms of the actual l'din, actual obligation, you don't actually have to follow his shita, because he's like a singular opinion, nobody else seems to hold like him. And here's the significant part for our purposes. Why do you not have to follow him? Because the whole prohibition, the whole idea of wearing a kippah, is only a din of midat chasidut. It's only something which is proper practice, something that you should do if you're, you know, acting properly as a, you know, good Jew, a good Jewish boy. But you don't have to do so as a bona fide prohibition. That's your Moshe contention, which I'll just make an aside. Who does he seem like he's postulating like? Like the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham. The position that it's not a bona fide prohibition. Yeah, Bella. There still is a market, I think, in Israel for tiny yarmulkes. I remember there's a guy when I was in yeshiva who was probably the starkest guy I knew, who had this tiny yarmulke you could barely even see. But still, is a market.
The fact I got without even asking was that it has to be 2 tefach.
Yeah, it might be like a minimum size for it.
Yeah, that's because I had a girlfriend at the time who made me a really small one, and the rabbi at Harvard Hill came up to me and said, that's too small. It's got to be at least two. Put your hands together if it's that big.
His arm is pretty big.
No, she's just, they make them. People were wearing them that
time. His arm is pretty big. So
yeah, that point's probably more than 2 feet.
Yeah.
My former roommate was stopped on the street, and
hey, one second. I did 1 second.
My former roommate was stopped on the street once, and the lady said, "You're rebelling against your parents because you have such a small yarmulke. Your parents weren't from." But it was nice, and you know, let it go.
David, do you have a comment? Or it was only bums. Yeah. I will say, I just happened to have looked this up. If you want to know, just like as an aside, Rav Moshe, as far as I know, doesn't qualify his sizes. Even in his tshuva, he just talks about he doesn't think you have to pass like Rav Shlomo Kluger. I did see that Panini Halacha, Rav Melamed. In Israel, he qualifies what he thinks is like big versus small. He thinks anything which is would cover most of your head, which he defines to be about, if it's longer in the diameter, about 12 centimeters, which isn't that big. Which is, you know, the average kippah is probably around that size, to be honest. So you're probably pretty good, regardless. But you know, there is like you can look up online. I can send it to you.
Centimeters.
Yeah, something like that. So
less than 2 tefach.
Yeah, so it's pretty small.
About 5 inches.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, there might be a subtle difference between a big head versus a small head, but you can look it up. I can send you a list if you want.
I'm surprised that wearing a kippah is so prevalent.
Yeah, so that's exactly. So let's get right into it. That's a great point. So it's only midah chasidut. That's his point here with regard to paskening. And he makes, this is an aside, af she'atak varnagu yisrael, even though this is a real practice, yesh ledun bazakin isser, so you could argue that maybe it's like a real isser. We'll talk about that in a second, what exactly that line is. But nonetheless, he thinks that because it's only a midah chasidut, since the minhag, at the end of the day, you're doing this practice based on the minhag. Since the minhag is to follow the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch's practice only says cover your head, doesn't make any mention of how much you have to cover your head. Therefore, as long as your head is covered, and then there's something on your head, and therefore, as long as your head is covered in any way, that's good enough. You're fine, you know, all is good, and you do not need to worry about having a larger kippah. You're fine. That's with regard to the size of kippahs. But here Moshe is going to finally start talking about, you know, some of the meat and bones about what exactly the prohibition of wearing a kippah is. And he makes an aside here, and it's kind of better if we do this later, but it is worth just talking about, which is that when we talk about halakha, There are things that Trump and hug him. There's practices you do. But sometimes, let's say I do something, like I take upon myself a certain humra, a certain, you know, I decide every day, let's say every Shabbos, or every time it's Kriyas Torah, I'm going to stand up for leaning. Because I feel like that's the right thing to do. I'm going to stand up for leaning. I do it 3 times. So at that point, there's a certain rule, which is that if you've done something 3 times, and now it's forbidden for you to change based on the principle of a neder, that effectively doing a Devar Mitzvah, some type of Chumra, 3 times, it's as if you took upon yourself a vow, promising that you would do this over and over, that you take upon this Chumra, and the only way, ideally, really, that you should get out of or go back on, you know, this Chumra, this obligation, this stringency that you took upon yourself, is if you do a Tar Nedarim. If you, at, you know, Erev Rosh Hashanah, or you can do it really any time of the year if you wanted to do this.
Just do it generally, like Erev Rosh Hashanah, and don't specifically think of this, or you still absolve.
You probably would, yeah. Probably would. But if you have something in mind, you definitely should mention it.
Right. 3 times in a row, or just 3 times?
It has to be in a row. Yeah. If you do a practice 3 times in a row, so I decide, you know, I it's too much for me, you know, you know, it's just I like to sit down.
I've got
weak knees. You know, I want to sit down. I want to sit down. So you can go, you know, get a, make your own, you know, base stand of 3 men, and they'll make a tar nedarim, and you'll say, I didn't want to make this neder. I realized I wouldn't have done it. And then you're fine. But otherwise, you really do have this obligation as a bona fide neder. And a neder is much more stringent. Yeah. Sorry, who would need a Tar Nedarim? Interesting. Okay. How did you guys hear that? That you said that there was a story of a woman who, I guess, used to go to shul every day, and when she had a baby, she wasn't able to do so, and so they brought in like a real Beis Din to do a Tar Nedarim.
So I decided I'm not going to have a shul anymore, that I would have to be a Matar Neder.
Wait, this seems like it just has so many applications.
Well, for you not to go to shul might be a little different than a woman not going to shul.
Okay,
in terms
of supposed to go to shul.
Yeah, it might be slightly different. Yeah, in terms of Tar Nedarim, it might not work the same way. But yeah, that's the basic idea. So either way, why is it important? Because a Neder is much more stringent than a Minhag. A plain minhag, it's, you know, it's important to keep minhagim, certainly, but it's not as strong as a neder.
And my point, I feel like this whole idea of neder, like, I feel like people fall into it all the time without realizing it.
Not as often you think. I mean, once you learn, the first time you learn it, maybe you think, like, oh, it happens all the time. But I don't think it's as common as most people. If you do something multiple times, you're probably still doing it. If you do something 3 times in a row, like, you really, it's more intentional at that point.
And it's not like a minor. We're not talking about just like how you walk into the house every day. We're talking about like.
Yeah, like, it wouldn't be like, I mean, like it wouldn't be like a Kriyas Torah example where like, well, it happens to be that like, you know, each time like your rabbi, like on Aliyah, you stood up during Aliyah and like it happened to be 3 times in a row. So like, that's not how it would have to be like you actually stood up, you know, intentionally, you know. But you can apply it to any example. I just, you know, picked one. Either way, I want to get, you know, move a little further. So either way, you could have argued that neder, that in effect, you know, every man who wears a kippah, you know, more than 3 days in a row, effectively should have this din of neder, not just a minhag. That would be your most contention. Maybe you argue that it's actually much more than just a minhag. And so Moshe says no. And he makes this really interesting point about neder, which is that neder, according to him, when we start a din, neder shenag shosha pamim, ain la'asor. Why is this not relevant to misan nedarim? At the end of the day, why do I follow this principle? Why do I wear a kippah? I wear a kippah because it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that it is a midat chasidut to do so. I do so because the Shulchan Aruch said it's a good practice to do so. And therefore, I'm not accepting upon myself some type of extra stringency. I'm just trying to follow what, like, the Shulchan Aruch says every good Jew should do. And therefore, Moshe's really interesting idea, which is that midat chasidut, that concept of a neder, only applies if you're trying to do a chumra, more than, like, the basic obligation. And when it comes to a kippah may not be an actual prohibition, but in effect, it becomes almost like this basic definition basic thing that like Shulchan Aruch writes, and I'm just trying to follow the basic rule of Shulchan Aruch. And so because I'm trying to follow this basic rule of Shulchan Aruch, even though it's not an actual prohibition, the rules in the Dharm don't actually apply. The Dharm only apply for things above and beyond the Shulchan Aruch, not things which the Shulchan Aruch says, even if the actual normative level and in the sense of prohibition is that there's not actually a prohibition. Does that like make sense? It's a really interesting
counterintuitive. You think that if it's not required and you're doing it because you want to take on a chumrah, it sounds
It's absolutely not particularly intuitive. I agree 100%, which is why people disagree with this.
He's trying to get to an outcome, and he's
I think it fits within his larger. As we keep learning, I think it really fits within his larger view of what kippah wearing is. But I think it's really not intuitive at all. But it's really an aside. If you didn't like it, you didn't follow it, it's fine. We're moving on. It's really an aside. Because I want to get to the next main point, the thrust of the matter, which is what exactly is the prohibition? How does the Moshe really feel about wearing a kippah? So page 2, he mentions as follows. He mentions in the side point, the stira between in the Magen Avraham. That's the first paragraph there. It's not really relevant. There's a contradiction within the Magen Avraham, different places. Next paragraph, he says as follows. Therefore, at the end of the day, what do I believe the rules about wearing kippah? How normative is it? What type of prohibition is it? The leilech dalet amot, that walking 4 amot, av sheikar hadin hu mimidat chasidut, even though at the end of the day it's really only midat chasidut, aval, however, kvar nagu kol yisraelit naig midat chasidut zeh. All Jews, all Orthodox Jews, have accepted upon themselves this minhag, this midat chasidut. Afilu anashim pshutim, even regular people, even, a stama Jew, everyone, even the simplest Jew in the shtetl, every single person wears a kippah. Aval midat chasidut la'achidim ha'minagim ha'chasidut, v'chein l'chol tamil chacham yesh la'achmer shalo leich b'gmei rosh, afilu pachmer da'alamot, some people are machmer, walk even less than 4 amot, but every single person seems to accept this midat chasidut. Uladina, and therefore, he thinks, yesh lesor afilu b'yeshiva mitzad cho ka'akum kiataz. He thinks that at the end of the day, how do we paskin? According to the positions I earlier outlined between the Taz and Magen Avraham, we paskin, according to our motion, like the Taz, that there is a bona fide prohibition to walk or to sit even without a kippah. And what was the reasoning for the Taz? Why was there a prohibition for wearing a kippah? If you remember, why would Pride Taz say there was a prohibition? Because of Chukot Akum, right? Because of because we do not want to act like the non-Jews. The non-Jews do not sit down. They take off their hats, right? Remember, Ramosha's writing is Tshuva in 1957. So they walk with their hats. They take off their hats when they walk, when they enter a building or when they sit down. And therefore, there's bona fide prohibition for us to act like the non-Jews. We have to wear a kippah seated at all times. So that's the Ramosha's psak. And then he tries to figure out, okay, so what about the Magen Avraham? Because the Magen Avraham certainly is a position, and actually most people really think the Magen Avraham is how we paskin. But the Ramosha seems really convinced the Taz makes a lot of sense. So he tries arguing, maybe the Magen Avraham agrees to the Taz, and he says, maybe the Magen Avraham is only writing in a case where you're walking, v'ulai b'yeshiva af Magen Avraham yodid asur, maybe when you're seated, which Magen Avraham doesn't explicitly mention, maybe there he would admit that there's a problem of Chuk Akum, but in walking, there's not a problem the same way, because while walking, even the non-Jews, they wear a hat at that point, so it wouldn't be the same prohibition. He tries to explain the Magen Avraham maybe fitting within the Taz. It's really a little bit of a stretch. Magen Avraham probably does not agree with the Taz in any sense, but he tries stretching it in because he's really convinced the Taz makes a lot of sense. If you want to read it, you can read it yourself. We're not going to go through it, but he's convinced at the end of the day that Yesh Lasor Ki HaTaz, that you should paskin, that it's prohibited. There is a bona fide prohibition to walk without a kippah, to sit without a kippah. It's an actual prohibition based on Chukat Akum.
Just because of my lack of understanding of the halakhic process, let's say you read Rav Moshe Feinstein Tshuva and you personally disagree with it. Are you, bound by what Rav Moshe rules at the end of the day? You say, I think the Magen Avraham.
If you're a posek, I guess you would.
If you're just a random Jewish boy, you kind of have to follow what Ramosha might
say. Well, you have to follow your posek. You can say that Ramosha is not my posek. But
if Rabbi Robinson is the person you ask all your halachic shilas to, then you would say. So you would ask him, right?
Yeah, you ask Rabbi Robinson, and Rabbi Robinson himself will decide. He might say, maybe you're, well, and their relatives, you know, Scottish or British. But let's say Rav Moshe had been British. Let's say he was Jonathan Sacks, true, we're reading here. I'm sure right around some day, like, I feel incumbent to follow, you know, this psak. Now, it happens to you, it could be that I don't actually know how he feels about this particular psak. It could be he feels like, I don't feel like this psak is, you know, binding. I personally don't agree with it, you know.
Let's say, like, my future son doesn't want to wear a kippah, and he goes and he gets, like, a psak from a rabbi. I could think that's okay.
I mean, he could do so, yeah. If he gets a psak, yeah. Yeah.
I have to send my son to ask for Piskei Halacha from whoever was a rabbi of the shul when he was younger. And I didn't want to tell him what I was told because I'm a rabbi.
Of it, yeah.
So he would go ask Rabbi Robinson, let's say, and he gets upset.
Yeah, him. Yeah. Any rabbi is fine. Yeah, David. Interesting. Okay, so actually, this transitions us really well into the next thing, which I wanna, you know, we'll cover this and we'll finish this up maybe next week. But I wanna begin because at the end of the day, so far, you know, the first half of the tshuva we read from Rav Moshe was, you know, that was practical about the size of the kippah, but we kind of skipped that part. But the next part really was theoretical, right? Like whether you pass like a tazmag and avram, like it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, like you should wear a kippah whenever you can. But where does this really come up? Where does the motion really get these questions? So one of the major issues that comes up is when it comes to a profession. That Jew who wants to get a job in, you know, a non-Jewish firm, a non-Jewish company, where the boss is not Jewish, the employer is not Jewish, there is a fear potentially that maybe they won't get the job, maybe the job performance will be, you know, hampered in some way, maybe they won't get the promotion. You know,
a non-religious Jew sometimes.
Even non-religious Jew potentially, yeah, absolutely. Either way, the wearing of a kippah will identify them with a certain creed, and that will affect them very negatively in their job. And so Rav Moshe was asked a number of questions about wearing a kippah in this context. And that really brings us up to David's point about the jury. Doesn't talk about juries, but in general, any jobs. Let's go through the first tshuva. Rav Moshe writes his tshuva in 1977. All right, so this is almost 20 years later. All right, what does Rav Moshe say? So the first case, he presented as follows. The situation somebody presented to him was a case where someone was going for a job interview, right? Wanted to get a job. Omrim lo, that the person who recommended him, right? The person who recommended him for the job, omrim lo sheyitzarich sham lehorid kovo me'al roshov v'leishe b'gilu harosh b'lo kipash shekrim yamaka. That the person who suggested to him recommended him to get this interview, tells him that he has to take off his kippah. That if he wears the kippah, he won't get a job. And this person, the recommender, the person who, you know, referenced him, told him to get the interview, that the person who gave the recommendation is saying that I myself will also be negatively impacted if this schlump comes in wearing a kippah, right? It'll look bad that my recommendation, my word of who's a good candidate, wears a kippah. So it'll be bad for my own job as well, not just for his, but mine as well. But they say that after he gets the job, once he's already been accepted, then at that point, you know, once you've been accepted, then you can wear the kippah. Then you can say, oh, I forgot I left it that one day for the interview, but now I really am a kippah wearing guy. That's the case presented. He needs this particular job. Sham in Denver, living in Denver in 1977. Because the particular, I guess, the field or, you know, I guess the situation in Denver at the time was you couldn't find a job among people who did not care about taking off your hats during the work hours. So can you take off your hat? Can you be bareheaded? For this job interview. So what do you guys think?
Pranasa.
Okay, so yes, you think yes based on Pranasa. Any other feelings?
Well, if the whole halacha comes from differentiating ourselves from the non-Jews. This is part of it.
Yeah, if the whole thing is based on defending from non-Jews, then potentially why should it be any different?
Maybe we discuss. How many people do that?
Yeah, no, I happen to agree with you. I think that the trickery there it doesn't reflect very well. Doing that. Yeah, I mean, you might have the luxury then. I don't know. I mean, some people don't unfortunately have that luxury. Yeah.
It can be very evident by your resume that you're from Jew. You know, if you have on the Yeshiva University or something like that, and Denver has its own places. And, you know, interviewers, you know,
yeah. Onto that. And your last name is Schwartz, and you're...
If you have a resume, and, I mean, I can just tell you what I did myself. When I went to job interviews, I did not wear my kippah. When I got hired for the only job I ever had, I showed up for work a couple of months later. I was wearing a kippah. Nobody said a thing. I didn't say it. You know, but I thought I might not get the job if I wore it.
The thing is, how do you deal at the same time when you interview with a kippah or not, you... would be explaining about Shabbos.
I didn't tell them that till after I got the job also. Because nowadays there are laws that they can't discriminate against you. So, you know, if they had asked me, that would be illegal. So I wasn't hiding anything from them that they had any right to know.
Awesome. Yeah, probably depends on the place. Yeah, absolutely. And the situation. So either way, so I would say when it comes to the prohibition, so I mean, there's one question obviously certainly about like interview versus not afterwards. But in terms of the prohibition, I think getting back to the actual, you know, even the interview itself, I think as we kind of argued, if it's midat chasidut, so you could argue maybe it's only midat chasidut, it's only a minog, maybe then you can take it off, especially for parnasa, maybe that's a good reason to take it off. But if it's really a prohibition, if it's really a bona fide prohibition of chukat akum of being different from the Jew, from the non-Jews, and which naturally their Moshe paskin, you know, in the previous tshuva, then in theory there should be a real prohibition that you can't, you know, you can't just be over an actual prohibition, an iser, just to, you know, even for your salary. Like unfortunately, that's the way. Like we believe, you know, we have a normative religion. We have like certain prohibitions. We can't, you know, you just can't go over even for. You know, for your salary. So I think it's a really interesting question for Moshe, like, how is he going to deal with this? So Moshe says as follows. How does Moshe actually deal with it? The mutar. He thinks it's permitted. Now, why is it permitted? The how the dina begmarad or vashitot have yuli harosh afdeh vashuk reg yina chasidut. He says, first of all, according to most opinions, gilu harosh, uncovering your head, even walking, you know, only a minute of chasidut. And he mentions as follows about Kazush, Shikol Adam Sotanag Yachidut, and he mentions that there are some people who even mention, Aflahaskir Shem Shemayim Begilur Rosh. There are some positions who believe that even, making a bracha is permitted without a kippah. There was a few, I'll mention as an aside, there was a big, among like Jewish Twitter, can I mute everyone? And just a bit loud.
So it feels like he's uprooting his previous stance, which is a little bit.
Yeah. So there was a few like a year ago or 2 years ago during one of Trump's impeachment trials. One of his lawyers was a firm Jewish lawyer. Who was not wearing a kippah during the trial, and at some point he wanted to take a cup of water, so he took the cap, put the cap on his head, and then took a drink, and it became a whole thing among Jewish Twitter. Is that okay? Not okay. But that happens to be there are positions that you don't need to wear a kippah while making a bracha. It's not the main position, but there are such positions that exist. And so Ramosha is saying that even the existence of these positions suggests, like, wearing kippah really is only a chassidut. Shelachein af shekevan shekvar inhiguzeg b'chol Yisrael lo gar minhagi yisrael kedoshim. That it's certainly no worse than like other minhagim. It's certainly a very important minhag that everyone has accepted. Nonetheless, though, vaday lo adif masin memash lehetzed gadol ein mechuyav. The onus mamor who onus legabe mitzvot asay. At the end of the day, despite the fact that it's a very serious minhag, a very well accepted minhag, at the end of the day, there's a rule that hesed gadol, a major loss, financial loss, and certainly not having a job is a major financial loss, is going to be permitted in a case of, for the sake of a minhag, right? You can go against the minhag, for the sake of a hesed gadol, right? That's certainly one of the principles of halacha. What type of things, what type of causes or reasons can you, obviate the need for certain halachot, certain, requirements? And so one of them is that if it's only a minhag, so something like a hefset gadol, a major financial loss, is going to be enough to override the need to follow the minhag. And he mentions as follows, and you can prove to this the fact that the Gemara says when it comes to mitzvah asay, a positive mitzvah, you don't have to do more than chomesh, you don't have to pay more than one-fifth of the extra value of the mitzvah. Let's say the market for etrogim or, any mitzvah is like really expensive where you are because there's like a real shortage. So meikar adin, if the price is more than one-fifth of the norm, you wouldn't have to pay. That's like the halacha. He mentions there's even like even one position which says that, the imkein kol shekein v'gilui rosh, eino asei de Torah, and so kav v'chomer when it comes to gilui rosh, covering your head, that covering your head is not even a mitzvah asay, it's only a minhag. It's only a, v'afl asay derabanan, it's not even derabanan, it's a minhag tov, it's a good thing to do, good practice to have, to do. So therefore, it should be fine to do so. However, aval, this is the next paragraph, aval, what about the tas? And he had argued that we don't paskin like this position, the position of Magen Avraham, paskin like the tas. So what about that position? So our motion says as follows, shita ta tas, what do you do with that? So according to the Taz position, the Ika Isra bim Komenu Shiuchokakum, Shiimkein, according to this Taz, this position that it really is a bona fide prohibition based on following the ways of the non-Jews, so who love Shionis Mamun Ein Onis, Shmina Roy La Hachmer Kamoto. So in that situation, you wouldn't be allowed to take off your kippah. That even a Hesed Gadol, even a serious financial loss, would not suffice to allow you to transgress an actual prohibition. Right, according to the Taz, you have a real problem. So how can you paskin its mutter? So he says as follows. He quotes and he mentioned that he actually paskin like the Taz. Vayim de Grot Moshe. Look at the Grot Moshe I quoted earlier that he chakti b'tamah magen avram that he wrote earlier. We saw it previously. Miko makom. Nonetheless, why can I paskin here in Likula? Because two reasons. A, b'makom esed gadol kazeh yesh lesmoch alayu. Even though I believe that in Ikar Adin, truly the Taz is the one we should paskin like. In situations in which there's a hesed gadol, there may be room to follow the more lenient position. Right? Maybe according to the stringent position, we would have to be machmir. But I believe that in these situations, when we have two opposing positions, and they're both positions that you really are like, given by, real achronim, something you can really trust and rely on, even though I believe that one of them is more reliable, you should really follow, in Makom Hesed Gadol, in cases of real financial loss, I believe there's room to follow the more makel position. As the Ramosha thinks, in this situation, even though he doesn't like the Taz, he thinks we should be passing like the Taz, there's room to follow the Magen Avraham. You can follow the more makel position. That's reason one.
So you can only follow the more makel position in this position of going for a job.
But not like in general case, not like if you're just like walking in the street or any situation where there wouldn't be a Hesed Gadol. Even if there was like only a small potential, like Malcolm Reva, let's say like I had like a good business opportunity to make like a little extra money, so that wouldn't be sufficient to switch opinions potentially. I mean, it's not, you could argue, but Moshe certainly is not making, it's more gray about whether you'd be allowed to switch to the other, less mainstream position according to Moshe's, argumentation. However, there is a second reason for why he thinks that you don't have to postulate like the top. And that is because the sociological realities of the day have changed. I don't know if they've changed from the 50s. I'm not sure if he's making that point, but they certainly have changed from the time of the Taz. In our country, in America, nowadays, in 1977, Shebarur shelo misad chukeyem osim ze al mishum dechein nakel lehu yoter. It is clear to us that nowadays, when non-Jews take off their hat, they don't take off their hat because it is some type of law. It's not a religious law. It's not even necessarily like following like the gentlemanly custom. This is what everyone does. They're doing it because it's comfortable. Who wants to wear a hat inside? You know, it's nice to have the breeze. Why would you wear a hat? What's proof to this? You can see this. That first of all, proof one, is that no one wears a hat typically when they walk outside. Nowadays, meaning in the 70s, nobody goes outside and wears a hat, right? So it's truly a different culture. They're not wearing hats and taking it off. There's no hat to begin with. Even the religious Jews, they're not always wearing hats. They're sometimes only wearing kippahs, right? And he's probably referring to our community. And you can see that Shomrei Torah is often a code word for actually the non-Orthodox community. V'af b'choref, and even in the winter, Shikar b'chutz, leilach b'lo kova, so people wear hats because it's cold outside. Tekev shebayin lebayit, chosina kovaim, and leishim yarmikas. The religious Jews, they take off their hats, you know, right away when they get inside the house, right? Once they're, you know, protected from the elements, they take off their hat. V'imkein vadai, b'shvil ze gam anachim en hokim b'kovim shekecham gam b'chutz. And therefore, it's clear that the non-Jews, when they walk without hats outside, when it's hot outside, and even when it's cold outside and they wear hats, they take off their hats. And therefore, since there's no actual need for them to wear a hat at any point, they take off their hat, right? It's not that there's some type of law that when you enter a building or you have like a nice civilized conversation, you should take off your hat. They take off their hat because that's like the way they do it. They never wear hats, right? Nobody wears hats nowadays. It's not so common. There's no actual, you know, prohibition here. And therefore, the argument of the Taz is no longer relevant. It's not that he's rejecting the Taz is still right, that there should be, in theory, this prohibition of chukat akum, of following the practice of the non-Jews. It just happens to be this is no longer the practice of the non-Jews. And so there's no actual prohibition to wear, to take off or kippah, even in the situation of getting a job. And therefore, at the end of the day, according to everyone, even the Taz would admit that nowadays in America, the entire need to wear a kippah is only based on a minhag, a good practice. And therefore, it's no more stringent in terms of halachic hierarchy than a hefset gadol. It's only a minhag. And therefore, if you have a real financial loss, such as a job interview, that you're not going to be able to get a job, then you can take off your kippah and you'll be fine. Take off your kippah for the job interview. Ramosha gives you a full heter. You have to do so. No qualms about it.
I'm assuming that in the case of like if you travel to a foreign country where it's a potential anti-Semitic danger to wear a kippah, he probably rules similarly.
I don't think he ever writes anything about it, but I mean, two things. You can always wear a hat. There are ways to wear hats. And B, like you also, he might make an argument. I don't know if he does, but he could make an argument that who's making you go to that foreign country. I mean, if it's a business trip you have to go on, it's different. But if you're going because, you know, I just want to go, you know, visit Egypt because I want to see the pyramids, maybe don't go to Egypt.
So you could take a yarmulke off for a job interview, but what about you get the job and then what?
So it's actually a really interesting question in terms of Rav Moshe's like argumentation, like whether – if you're not sure, like you knew for sure the interview is going to be, they're going to have a negative impression of you. And now you have this job and you're not really looking, you're not angling for a promotion. You don't think like it's really going to affect you, but like it probably will affect you a little bit. Like at that point, can you take off your kippah for Rav Moshe? It's not really so clear. I think Rav Moshe would still argue there may be some type of midat chasidut. There still is a good minhag, a good proper practice, but it's not a bona fide prohibition. He's certainly not going to tell you have to do anything. What he'd recommend, I actually don't know. I don't know if he'd recommend you to take off your kippah.
It's probably circumstantial based on whether you can really lose your job wearing it or not.
Yeah, I mean, but it's certainly a really interesting question. Like, how far does Rav Moshe go? And we'll talk about this next week. I want to end here. We'll talk a little bit more about these cases because Rav Moshe talks about this more. And I think the question is really, you know, up in the air in terms of like the gray area. If it's clear, you know, and I think people have a pretty good sense when it's clear, then Rav Moshe gives a full blanket head there. But when it's not so clear, there's more to talk about. And we'll talk about that next week about, you know, walking in the street, you know, leaving your job, you know, certain situations where maybe it's less obvious what you should do. So we'll end it here. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask now. Otherwise, we'll continue with this next week.
Thank you.
Joe was asked a few years ago why he didn't wear a yarmulke, and he said it was a generational thing. And I thought it was an excellent answer, because in the, you know, up in, you know, maybe the last 20 years, you know, in New York or 30 years, a lot more people wearing, and I'm not sure that Joe grew up from. You know, it's just more common now when you just don't start doing it, you know, if you're 60 years old or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this when it comes to even to names. We talk about, like, the Jewish names. Yeah. I think that, like, there's a lot, there's been significant changes in American culture to accept kind of minorities' practices. Wearing a kippah is, you know, no different than women wearing a hijab. In America, like, people, yeah, you know, well, hijab might be actually, they bat more eyes.
On TV, right, with hijabs and with kippot. Yeah. Even in advertising.
Yeah,
all
I think it's.
With hijabs in advertising.
I think America is one of those countries where actually we do a very good job at being more accepting, you know, of all minority practices. And we talk about it with Jewish names. I think it's, you know, it's a positive as a minority within, you know, Christian country.
When I first got my job, I used to go to court, but I didn't do trials, I did appeals. So when I went to court, I would take my keep off. It's the only time I took my keep off is when I went to court. All the, because I figured there might be a judge who would be biased against me, and I didn't, or prejudiced against me, and I didn't want